Good afternoon. This afternoon I'm with Christine James of RIL, who's spent the last 20 years living in RIL, but has memories of RIL from throughout her life. Good afternoon, Christine.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. One of the things that you mentioned was your early memories in Birmingham and your father-in-law's involvement in the war.
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about what he did?
Well, he was sort of 003 and a half. He worked in communications and he was in charge of communications in Birmingham. And because the bombing was taking place in Birmingham, they moved the operation so that he could work from home. So we had all the stuff fitted, including a great radio mast in the garden.
And this was where in Birmingham?
In Bourneville.
Right. And then your future husband, with the family, didn't they come to Wales, to Aberystwyth?
They came to Aberystwyth, yes.
That was for a holiday?
It was for a holiday, but it didn't turn out a very good holiday. The guest house they stayed in had a flood, and the bacteria was present. Although it had been cleaned, the bacteria was present, and my husband was at the crawling stage, and he picked up a bug that resulted in him suffering with meningitis. He was taken to the local hospital, and the care he received was absolutely brilliant. He recovered. His mother had to stay behind with him, and they were there for 6 weeks, all the time he was in hospital. And he particularly remembers one nurse. Well, he doesn't remember, but his mother remembered a nurse who was so dedicated that she came to see her patient even on her days off. And eventually, her care had the result she wanted, and Jeff began to get better. He was taken by ambulance back to Birmingham when he recovered sufficiently, and of course he had to learn to walk again, and all the things he was learning to do beforehand had to be relearned. But all was well. He grew up a very happy man. We had a very happy life. We had a couple of children, and he was a very intelligent man. I defy anybody to defeat him with a mathematical problem. He was absolutely brilliant at maths. And, well, he just had a good and happy life. And finally, he died in 2012 with cancer. And that's it, really. I stayed on in Wales because... I like Wales.
Mm-hmm. The second time that you came, that he came to Wales, he came with you, which was for a very different reason, wasn't it? Because he was...
Yes. As I say, he grew up, he had to relearn, it was but he did it very successfully. And when they built the Trawsfynydd nuclear power station, Jeff applied for a job. The company he worked for in Birmingham had gone into liquidation, so he was out of a job, and I was expecting our first baby. So he decided to apply for this job, and he got the job, and we moved to Wales, and we were here for 5 years initially. And then we went back to the Midlands. But Wales has threaded its way all through our life. I first came here from a Birmingham school when I was 11 years old. First time I'd seen the sea, and it had the usual real drizzle, but I never forgot it. Somehow or other, Wales got under my skin, and it never left me. Mm-hmm. It still hasn't left me. And that's it, really. Wales and I are one.
Quite a change from moving from central Birmingham for a young mother moving to what was then Merionethshire?
It was Merioneth.
Yeah.
Yes, at first I hated it. We lived in a small village. Not that there's anything wrong with small villages, except if you are used to the city where you can go a bus more or less anywhere, shops everywhere, and then you're in a village with one shop, a caravan site on which we lived, and maybe a pub, I can't really remember. But there was a chapel, I remember the chapel, because I got very friendly with the priest. And I remember he was from Ireland, and he used to come for dinner every so often. I used to feed him, because he looked as if he could do with a good meal. And I used to feed, no, not for any other reason except that we got on very well. I don't think it was even the same religion. But that doesn't matter anyway. We got on well together, and he used to come to the house for a meal occasionally. And as far as I know, he went back to Ireland. But that was a long, long time ago, when I was young.
And then you moved then to Trouse-Funneth, didn't you? Which was
we moved to Trouse, and that was a lot better. There was a couple of shops, and it was quite, actually, it was lovely there. It was a nice village, and I made lots of friends there, and of course by that time I'd got two children. And it was more convenient, and they were good days. And then we decided we should get on the housing ladder, so we went to a place called Dufferin na Dhoudraí, which is halfway between Barmouth and Harlech, and we lived there for a while. The best thing I remember from there is actually managing to get a job. I'd got two children, as I say, but I used to go to the hotel, the local hotel, and I used to wait on, really, just do waitress services, serving dinners and that sort of thing. They had a bar in what was the cellar, and I used to take snacks down there, and I liked that too.
Do you remember the name of the hotel?
Oh, I can't. I've got it in my head, but I can't remember the name. But it is on the main road there. It was quite a big hotel. Mm-hmm. But the people who owned it were ex-colonials, so they were very interesting people too. They'd had... they, of course, were used to servants. And they'd gone from having everything done for them to having to do everything for people who stayed with them. So it was quite an amusing time to look at them and see them adapt to their new circumstances. But they were wonderful to me. Really, really great to me, they were. I worked for them until we finally left, when we went back to the Midlands. And we stayed in the Midlands till Jeff retired and we came back to live in Wales,
yeah.
which was where we wanted to be all the time. So.
And you settled in Rhyl?
Oh, yeah, I like Rhyl. I mean, Rhyl has a terrible press. And it isn't, it really doesn't deserve it. It's run down, but all seaside towns are run down. But I've always been happy here. And when Jeff died, I did think about moving back. But I decided that I was where
this
I should
be. This is the place you'd be. And then December 2013... That was an eventful night when we had the flood here in East Rhyl.
Yes, that was a terrible day, December the 5th, 2013. I'd gone to have my hair done and I was feeling a bit, well, you know what it is, sometimes you get up and you're not really feeling, I wasn't feeling sort of quite my usual exuberant self. And I had my hair cut and I thought of catching the bus to Prestatyn. The weather wasn't very good. It was raining and there was quite a fierce wind. But in the end, I decided I wouldn't go and I came home. And thank the Lord I did, because if I hadn't, my little dog would have been on her own and I wouldn't have been able to get back to her at all that day. What happened was, it was just an ordinary Thursday. I went on the computer. I thought, oh, you know, pass the time. There was a warning, but it was nothing like what was going to happen. I looked out my porch window up towards the sea, and I saw a lot of people up there. Well, when I say a lot, about half a dozen. And they'd all got cameras. Now, this is nothing unusual. We often get this if the weather's bad. But that particular day, they suddenly came running down the road. And I opened the porch window and I said, what's the matter? The wall has gone, they said. The wall has gone. And I thought they meant the seawall. But they didn't. They meant the wall at Garford Road. There was a floodgate at Garford Road. But somebody had built the surrounding wall of breeze block. And when the tide came over, because the breeze block didn't manage to stay upright, so the sea went careering up Garford Road and round all the grid. As the road's on a grid, it went everywhere, finally coming back down my road. But anyway, it was terrible, actually. I saw the wave and I hadn't realised how high a wave could go, but it was way beyond the tops of the bungalow roofs. And it was awful. It was only here a couple of hours, I suppose, but there were more than 130 homes wrecked. It caused so much damage. I remember there was a dog who belonged to a neighbour in the next road, and I remember seeing the dog swimming through the water, and my next but one neighbour going out on an orange dinghy. Her husband was still in his pyjamas. He'd been in hospital. But the worst thing, the electrics went off. And I was here by myself with my little dog, not knowing what the heck to do. I couldn't go out because up the road there was still quite a bit of water. A neighbour had tried to get home opposite me and he couldn't get through. Eventually, he just walked through it all. But apparently it's supposed to be full of bacteria. And they don't recommend you walk through it. Anyway, he did. He got back home. But I was here and I didn't know what to do. I got no electric, no heat, no nothing. And, well, we sat here. There was a lot going on in the road. They had the pumps and, you know, it was a bit chaotic. And it got dark. And I remember sitting here thinking, what am I going to do? It comes back at night. It'll be back in a few hours and I'm here. What do I do? Nobody had given any... Oh, they had delivered some sandbags after the event. But some of the neighbours by that time had gone, but nobody had come to me at all. And I didn't know what to do. And I'd got a garland. And this girl, I mean, it was almost Christmas and I got this garland draped over the mantelpiece. And I said to my dog, who I'd wrapped in a blanket, I couldn't think what else to do. She was cold as well. And I dug out an old fur coat and put that on and wrapped Holly in a blanket. And I looked at this garland and I said to the dog, I said, that'll work. We can at least have a little bit of light. So I put the garland on and it was sparkling and was a little bit cheerful. And suddenly there was a knock at the window. They'd forgotten me, hadn't they? The garland had attracted their attention. And so I was asked to leave. Just got a bag, really, just my handbag and the dog. I carried her and we got in a dinghy, went up the top of the road, and then we were taken to the leisure centre and given a bottle of water, which I thought was a bit funny. I'd seen enough water that day. Anyway, I was given a bottle of water, and then luckily, my son and my son-in-law's mother at that time lived in Prestatyn. So she took me in and the dog as well, of course. And a volunteer drove us to her house and I was back within 48 hours. They got the electric on and I was back again. But I still think of that day. It's not something you forget in a hurry. And the thing I'll always remember for the rest of my life are the skips. First of all, the skips, of course, were in all the other houses. I was virtually on my own, but all the way up the road, they'd been evacuated because the water had got into the house. But I was here with the dog, and of course the dog needed walking and I took her usual walks twice a day. And as we went up the road, we passed the skips. And the thing that I remember most were the photographs. Water damaged, obviously, and things that you can't replace. And that made a terrible, terrible impression on me. It was a very strange thing to live through, actually. And, well, got through it. I'm glad to see the sea defences are better. Oh, and just a word for Chris Ruane, who was very, very kind. He was the ex-MP. He was the MP at the time, I should say. But he was very kind. And also a word for Bob at Denmore Stores. He was brilliant. Anyway, he was very, very good, Bob was. A real community spirit. So there was some good out of it. There was a lot of kindness. And a policeman. They were on 24 hours. They came marching round the road. And that was good to see them. But no, this is one battle we can't win. The sea will have us eventually. But for now, the flood defences are very good.
Thank you, Christine.